I'm Travis.
I'm Nate.
And I'm Emily, and you're listening to the Cast and Blast Florida podcast. We are serious outdoorsmen who don't take themselves too seriously, except for when we do. In this special episode, we're setting aside our usual antics to talk to you about the important and often misunderstood red tide bloom and how you can take action today.
What's new, Nate?
I got some new sunglasses, man.
Boom. What do you got?
From Smith Optics. I got the Guide's Choice.
They look baller.
They're awesome. I really like them a lot. They're super clear and they're really light. The frame is like super light, which I do enjoy because it doesn't fatigue your face.
Yep.
After a long day of fishing or outdoor activities. I got the blue mirror.
How do you like that?
Which isn't as like, I do like it a lot. It's not as mirrory as say like a Costa is. Because Costa, you can like look into it literally like a mirror.
Yeah, it's a little
totally reflected.
It's a little more subtle on those glasses.
Right.
I like
right.
that.
I like that too. I actually really like that a lot. But I went with the regular Chroma Pop. I didn't do the glass. I didn't see the benefit and the extra money for the glass.
I don't blame you.
But I'm excited. I haven't fished with them yet. I'm excited to go fishing with them and kind of see what they look like in the water.
Did you see them?
Yes. They looked awesome on you, I thought.
And they.
Yeah, I think they're bigger. I've got a bigger face, and they frame my face well, so. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think I'm going to get Guy's Choices next because after I saw how those fit you, I was like, yeah, that's a good look.
I'm a huge Smith fan. Huge.
Emily is actually the OG Smith person in this group right here.
Yep.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, when we used to work outside all the time, we had our own business, that was what I wore. And they're just, like you said, they don't fatigue. Like, they're just so lightweight. They don't get, you can wear them with a hat. They don't irritate you. They don't, I mean, they're just perfect. And the lenses are so yep. good.
We went to one of those big sunglass stores, like a super center in Alabama, in Gulf Shores, Alabama. And she tried on Ray-Bans and Oakleys and Costas. And she had no marriage to the idea of they have to be fishing sunglasses. She just wanted a good pair of sunglasses.
Yeah.
And she got a pair of Smiths. This was before Chroma Pop or anything else. I mean, this has been almost 10 years ago, 8 years ago.
Yeah, we're getting old.
It's been a minute, so... yeah, she's who switched me over too.
Yeah, I'm a fan. I'm a fan.
I'm not knocking Costas, but Costas, the front, the mirror looks cheaper to me.
Yes.
It looks more like a toy. Like, it looks almost like the little kid sunglasses that you get, the mirroring.
Yeah, I got you.
So I liked how soft the Smith looked. I was impressed with that.
What's new with you, Travis?
What's new?
I beat you to it.
Yeah.
I'll tell you guys what's new with me. My daughter is at Stetson University, and I'm not dealing well. Like, she's been there for 3 days or something, so it's basically like she's at camp or something like that, but I'm just saying, she's gone to college. And
it's two things
It's just camp until Christmas, right?
Yeah, yes. So, we're adjusting, but that's what's new, man. Well, me, Wilbur, Gilmer, we're all living the dream, but we're not living it with the...
No, Liv is living the dream.
That's true. So, we're excited for her. I'm excited for her. That's a cool... It's a cool campus and it's a cool place to go. And anyway, that's what's new with me.
Big changes, but you have a lot to be proud of.
Oh, I'm stoked for her. Like, I'm proud
she
of her getting there.
Awesome and, person.
Yep.
All the way around.
So what is new with you?
Well, if I can stop crying, we have a new review. Did you know I have a statistic for you all? We're the number one rated podcast amongst apartment managers. Property managers.
Based off all
property
data.
Property managers.
Yeah, yes. Based off all data we can find. Which is this review.
AKA this one review.
This one review. This is from Grant GP, and he says, moved into an apartment here in Polk County and was told about the host of this podcast from the leasing office when I asked them about having a firearm for hunting in the complex. I listened to one, and now I'm hooked. Got a lot to catch up on. 5-star review.
Boom.
Nice.
Thanks leasing office.
And Grant.
For the recommendation. And thanks, Grant, for the review.
Yeah, like that's awesome that when someone asks about firearm safety that they send them to listen to a show in which we may talk about boat snacks and or
The Office or
any songs on the way to the boat ramp.
Poor guy.
A whole smorgasbord of dumb ideas.
Not to besmirch firearm safety because we are big proponents of that, but I don't know that it's something we've ever talked about.
But it is important, kids.
Yes.
Be safe with your firearms.
Don't keep your muzzle pointed in the safe direction.
Yes.
And keep your safety on.
Don't aim at it unless you intend to shoot it.
But we do sometimes talk about things that are worth listening to on this podcast.
We do. Absolutely.
Today might even be one of those days.
Yeah. Today, the mountain's going to come to Muhammad.
What are we talking about?
We're going to talk water quality red tide in Florida.
Finally.
Finally. We promised you guys we would do this before the primaries in Florida. So we just wanted to, be able to kind of just give you some of our thoughts on it. And this will be a little bit of a mess.
Nah.
More than likely. But it will be also a little more technical and a little more serious than what we usually are. Hopefully Emily and Nate can keep me out of the ditch, so to speak.
There's no evidence of that so far, but we'll do our best.
Little evidence.
Okay, so you want us to just start asking you questions?
Sure.
I mean, can we start with a level set question and say, what is Red Tide?
That's a good spot to start.
Yeah.
That's a good place to start. Yep.
Nate knows a lot of this, but I'll run it. The Red Tide is basically an algae bloom. It's a single cell algae. And when it blooms, it produces toxins. And that kills fish. And it removes oxygen from the water, which also kills fish. So it's naturally occurring. I'm going to say that again, and I don't want any hate mail. Red Tide is naturally occurring. We're going to talk about, in this instance, we've got some things that are contributing nutrients to it that cause it to grow. Emily doesn't understand how things grow with fertilizer because she has the opposite of a green thumb.
Yes, I kill everything, plants.
So we might should send her down to hang out with the Red Tide for a minute. Essentially, we are fertilizing it with human interventions.
Right. And so what are some of those human interventions? I know people talk about the Laco discharges a lot, and people talk about Big Sugar a lot, and people talk about phosphate mining a little bit. But what are some of the main contributors to this feeding of the Red Tide?
Okay. We'll start unpacking that. When you talk water in Florida, the idea is all the water in Florida is flowing south from the central part. From basically Orlando, that water's all flowing south. And where we come from originally in Polk County, that water flows down what we call the Peace River watershed. If you're familiar with Polk County at all, which the leasing office that recommends us is, the water and the runoff from my backyard ultimately ends up in Charlotte Harbor. And similarly, the water in Orlando, in Disney's backyard, ultimately ends up, if everything was plumbed correctly, in Florida Bay, which is the southern tip of Florida. So it drains all the way from Orlando all the way down.
Can I ask a question and stop you right there? Because there's something I don't understand.
Sure.
So if our septic tank is like emptying into a drain field as it should, or the city sewer is plumbed as it should, I mean, like, I don't understand how septic tanks or like food fertilizer in our yard can impact the Charlotte Harbor waters.
Okay. So water moves down. It seeps and recharges the aquifer.
Mm-hmm.
And I should say this. I'm not a scientist at all. I'm what you would call an informed consumer on this issue. But water will seep down and recharge the aquifer, but water also moves horizontally subsurface.
Okay.
So no matter where you're at, the other thing to keep in mind, and you asked a good question when you talk about septic tanks, is everyone in our neighborhood, your neighborhood, where your parents live, like in this watershed, a lot of people have septic tanks. If you've ever seen standing water on top of a septic tank, it's no longer working as a septic tank because those nutrients are now in the water table and it's gonna go somewhere. It's got to go somewhere.
Okay.
And if it's all working properly and it's high and dry, it'll leach into the leach field. Then the grass will take some of it out. The rock will, it'll break down like it's supposed to. But when you have that much water, you can't.
So when we fertilize our yard, our flowers, it seeps down into the soil, down as it rains, etc., into the aquifer. But once it's that that far underground, that far subterraneous, okay, it goes horizontally and slopes down with the state of Florida.
No.
Okay.
Water moves that way, but what happens is when the rain hits, your yard can only absorb so much of the fertilizer you put on it. That's why you're seeing more and more push away. The state has some bans on certain times of the year in certain areas selling certain types of fertilizer. But your yard, I'm going to make this number up, it's something to this effect, can only absorb 25% or 35% of the nutrients. So when it rains and there's still little granules sitting on top of the surface, those granules are going to wash to the watershed. And so when I say watershed, water in Florida moves in what we call a sheet flow.
Okay.
That's a good word to know in all this, particularly when you think of the center of the state. The reason the Everglades is called the River of Grass is it's not, when it's functioning properly, if there were no people here, there would not be water stationary across the entire Everglades. It would be slowly creeping down the state. would be slowly sheet flowing down the state. That's why it's a river.
Right. So that water is moving slow enough, though, in the Everglades for it to be like filtered and cleaned by the aquatic vegetation and things like that.
In its natural state.
Right, in its natural state. And so what we're having now is some of these, especially talking about like the Lake O discharges, when they have to push the water east and west out of the lake because they don't really have any place to put it south.
Right. So let me
because
let me
of some of the farms and stuff like that.
Let me go history-wise. Lake O has a giant dam built around it, and that was built in the 30s. It started in the 30s. Herbert Hoover, I was teasing someone the other day, Herbert Hoover, the president that started the Great Depression, that may not have been his worst accomplishment. His worst accomplishment may have been the state of Florida's water in 2018. Mm-hmm. So when they built that dam, it was to prevent flooding for migrant communities because they had a lot of deaths in the 1928 hurricane. So I want to say it's the second deadliest hurricane on record. And Okeechobee basically overflooded its banks so much that people were just wiped out. So they built this dam around it, this dike around it, and then water was still coming in and they needed to control the water level. They didn't know what to do with all the water. So they did what's called canalized the two rivers closest to Okeechobee, the Caloosahatchee on the west coast and the St. Lucie on the east. So now we've got water coming down the state and then going out the sides. And there are some canals going south. There's actually four canals going south, but they can't move nearly the volume that those two going out the east and west can. Then we've added more people. We've paved more stuff. We've increased pulling water out of the aquifer and irrigation. And we've done all these things so that we're putting more water into the Kissimmee watershed. So there is a scientific report, there's several scientific reports that say anywhere from 90 to 98% of the water in Lake Okeechobee comes from north of Lake Okeechobee.
Yeah, I think I saw that report.
Okay.
Which is insane to think about.
Where north of Okeechobee?
Kissimmee
River, Lake Toho, Lake Kissimmee, Lake Hatchnahaw,
Istipogo,
Disney World. Like all of that water up there has to go somewhere and it's coming south. So it's all ending up and it's along the way, it's picking up all the nutrients.
Okay. So let me give you a scenario and you tell me if I'm right.
Okay.
Potentially Disney, which has beautiful gardens for miles and miles and miles that it has to keep up and fertilize, could be doing their thing, but the water is all creeping slowly down the state and it's going through all those waterways you just named to Lake O and then east and west being dumped out. And that's why the algae. So even though that doesn't cause red tide, those fertilizers will help red tide get crazier.
Well, okay. I want to pause there. This is Travis Math. So I'm going to go out on a limb here a little bit and say, this is Travis Math. The red tide outbreak that we've had in Charlotte Harbor this summer, I believe, and I've talked to scientists, so this is not just me speculating wildly, that it is more driven by septic than it is by discharges. And the reason I say that is if you look at the levels around the water tests, they're much higher in nitrogen, which is an indicator of waste versus phosphate, which would be
fertilizer.
Now, the fertilizer is definitely adding to the problem in Okeechobee, which is creating, there's two separate algae blooms. Okeechobee has a blue-green algae bloom, which is cyanobacteria, which is toxic. And I don't know that much about cyanobacteria. However, when that blue-green algae gets discharged down, it dies as it hits salt water. We're pushing so much water out that we're changing the salinity. Like in Cape Coral, right at the mouth of the Caloosahatchee, you're essentially changing the salinity because you've turned the water hose on full blast right there. So you're getting blue-green algae in canals that should be saltwater canals. You're getting plecos and stuff like that in places down there that you shouldn't have.
So can the blue-green algae survive in brackish water?
I couldn't tell you that.
Okay.
I don't know. But I do know red tide can only live in saltwater.
Right.
So when you look at the geographic locations of the red tide initially when the outbreak got the worst, it was driven by heavy rain events, Irma, because the red tide's been around since last October when we had Irma in September. And then you've got the tropical storm we had in May that just hung out there for weeks. I think some areas in Florida had 42, 43 inches of rain in the month. All that water was going into the Peace watershed and flooding down there and taking all the nutrients with it, dumping it into that algal bloom and causing it to basically explode on top of itself. Now, I'm not saying discharges didn't contribute to it, but I think that was a bigger part of that. So we have almost two distinct problems.
Right.
You've got the water quality, you know. Yeah, go ahead.
Right. And that makes sense because, like, you know, Fort Myers and Cape Coral really isn't that far from Charlotte Harbor. But I can't really imagine
Well, it's part of it.
Yeah, I mean, I can't really imagine that much water coming north from there to really impact, like, really feed the bacteria, the red tide, as much as, like, a Peace River or a Myakka River, like, discharges would in Charlotte Harbor.
Right.
Right. Well, I mean, is that making sense?
Yeah, that's kind of my thought, too. And you can find scientists that say it does. So I'm not a scientist. I'm just telling you what I've seen, what I know from being on that water so much. And I've talked to enough scientists that have the same, I mean, they've reached that same verdict. So discharges are bad. They're doing a lot of damage.
That's...
And as the red tide has creeped, so red tide occurs naturally and it sits offshore. And I couldn't tell you the distance. I probably should know this, but let's say it sits 12 miles offshore, 50 miles offshore, whatever. When you get a west wind on the west coast of Florida, what happens is it pushes it to the shore. And that's when you see a major fish kill, because it's always out there. It's just not in an estuary where you have tons of fish. So when we got, and I've heard this a couple of times now, because we had back-to-back La Nina patterns, we haven't had, and you saw this even when we were on vacation, Nate, we haven't had the convex effect of land breeze, sea breeze. We've had sustained west winds.
Right.
And if you're out of state and you don't know what we're talking about, in Florida, in the morning when you get up, the beach is calm because the wind's blowing off the land and it kind of keeps the surf down. And that's when you prefer to fish for tarpon. And then as the day goes on, heats up, the wind switches and blows on shore, blows from offshore, and the beach will kick up and get rougher and it gets calmer in the backcountry. We've had a lot of uncharacteristically rough west wind days all summer and all last summer, if you remember. We just didn't have a lot of calm days.
Right.
So that pushed that red tide in, then you couple the rain events with it, then you couple the discharges with it, because as you push it in and it begins to explode, it's got to go somewhere. So it's going to creep north and south. As it creeps south, it gets closer to Caloosahatchee. That's absolutely contributing to it.
Right.
So how does it creep north? Because that was one of the questions I actually wrote down before this episode, is I don't understand how the red tide seems to be traveling up the west coast of Florida. Is it just currents, wind?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of factors to that. You get tidal movement, which is, there's so many pieces to that. You'd have to understand, you know, if that west wind lays down, which it has recently,
mm-hmm.
and you get back to a land breeze, sea breeze kind of thing, or a day or two of sustained eastern winds, it will push it out. And then when the tide moves or whatever, it comes back in. And so it'll just kind of bounce in and out and drift whichever way it's supposed to go. You do have some eddy currents and stuff like that that will push it in different directions that don't seem natural.
Mm-hmm.
The best description I can come up with you is, you know, that's one spot we fish by the big oyster bar.
Yep.
You know how the current's always dumping out right there?
Yep.
But you can throw up into the little eddy and sometimes it'll drift the other way.
Yes.
Same kind of stuff happens all the time on bigger scales.
Got it.
And as it moves, it spreads. So it keeps growing as it's moving. So if it pushes a little further north, gets fed, and then grows, and then keeps pushing a little further north and grows. So it's not just like moving, it's actually actively growing as it moves.
The example I have, or the example that comes to my mind, is it's like an amoeba from a horror movie. Like, it just kind of, I know that's scientifically so not correct, but it's just like this blob that just kind of keeps fingering out. Right. And
yeah.
So, okay. So let me get back to our list. So tell me, what is the Cape Sable Seaside Sparrow?
Here's what we've got around Florida right now is we've got red tide in Charlotte Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Okeechobee discharges in Charlotte Harbor off the Caloosahatchee,
which in theory are feeding the red tide bloom.
They are for sure at some level feeding the red tide bloom, but they're also, even if there was no red tide, that's what I think people are getting caught up in. If there was no red tide, it is materially changing the southern end of the harbor. No matter what the discharges are on the east,
you can look at like satellite images from like 10 years ago,
mm-hmm.
of, you know, Estero Bay, where the Caloosahatchee comes in, and it's full of seagrass and just like really clear water. It's really beautiful. And now it's just basically this flat sand bottom and like this tannic, brackish looking water.
Yeah, wow. It looks like way over burnt coffee. And then as you push more volume, it's if I turn the water hose on and then put my thumb over it, what happens? It goes further, right?
Mm-hmm.
So as you push more volume down that river, that's all going further. And if you've got blue-green algae in it and it dies, it's going to die and hit the bottom. And it's going to create almost what you call a hypoxic zone. It's basically a dead zone where you're not going to get grass, you're not going to get sea life, you're not going to get... So it's really bad. If you go to the other side of the state, Indian River Lagoon has been experiencing the same thing going back several years. So like 2013 is when this started over there. Really bad. It started before that, but all of this kind of came out of, if you go down to Florida Bay, Florida Bay is dying because they can't get clean, fresh water. And it needs fresh water filtered through the Everglades to hold up its life. There's a lot of theories that the salinity is too high. No matter whether you think it's a salinity problem or not, no matter what, it's not getting enough fresh water into Florida Bay. So we've got to figure out a way to get water from Okeechobee, clean it, get it to Florida Bay. And we got to figure out a way to clean water before it gets to Okeechobee so that if it has to be discharged, it's not killing everything on either side. And we've got to figure out a way to clean up the watersheds that are not feeding into the Kissimmee watershed, the Kissimmee Basin. So, i.e. the Peace River, the Myakka, the stuff that comes off of that. And coastally, I mean, we all love Little Gasparilla Island, but everything on there is septic tank, right? When you get a flood tide, guess what? None of those septic tanks are working. They're filling nutrients around that area.
Okay, so my question was around the Cape Sable Seaside Sparrow.
Sorry.
That's okay.
So to understand,
got rolling.
To understand the complexity of the issue, I said earlier there are four canals facing south.
Yes.
Why can't you just open those four canals? Open the locks wide open and just let that water go. Just like you've got it going out east and west, why don't you just let it go south as well? Because you will have, I mean, they get misdirected around down there and stuff. You'll have, you can't run that water across the Everglades, A, because it's really dirty water, but B, there's a bird down there called the Cape Sable Seaside Sparrow, and he nests at a certain level above the water, and he's endangered. There's X number of them left in the world. So if you ran the locks open year-round, it would interfere with his nesting season. Well, you can't do that because then you'd be impacting an endangered species, which is not governed by anyone in Florida. It's governed at the federal level. So we've got a mess.
Why couldn't you just open them on the times when it wouldn't impact their nesting season?
You can, but you can't get enough volume through them. You got too much water coming in from the north, no matter what. So if you open them during the rainy season, like now,
mm-hmm.
you still can't get enough volume out. You still got to have discharges.
Yeah, but if you had the four going south and the one going east and the one going west, wouldn't it all kind of level out?
It doesn't work that way. It won't all level out because you can't get enough volume out the south. You'd have to look at it's a plumbing problem. You've got a water hose on full blast coming in and you've got trickles going out the bottom. So no matter what you do there, it may take off 2% or 5% or some number of that of the discharge, but it's not enough to really materially make a difference for also risking
an endangered species.
Yeah,
so, which federally
so,
protected.
You know, here's the question about the endangered species. So say they do open up those locks full bore all year long. Wouldn't the water level rise in those canals? And if those birds nest certain, you know, however far above the water level, wouldn't they just move their nests up above the water level?
That question's above my pay grade. Because
that's a smart question.
I've asked
Nathan
that same
Henderson.
Question to several people.
Am I like?
Yeah.
Like, that's my thing. Like, so the water levels rise, right? The birds are like, oh, well, I nested there last year. Well, now it's underwater, so I'm going to nest right here.
Right.
A foot above the water or whatever. You know, I don't even know what. I've never even heard of this bird. You know, so that's my thing. Like, wouldn't the rising water level cause the birds to nest higher?
I can't answer that because I asked the same question.
I think that's evolution, and I would say yes. They either figure out how to nest higher or they die.
Yeah. It's adaptation.
Yeah.
Now, they're adapting to higher water level.
There's a couple of things that we're skipping over here, and guess how many people live southeast of Lake Okeechobee? Like, we'll call it Miami, that area.
6 million.
The number I saw was 3 million, but it's a crap ton of people. The population of Florida in 1970 was 3 million. So you've essentially got all of those living south of Lake Okeechobee. If you understand aquifers a little bit, the Floridan aquifer provides water for most of the state, and it runs just south of Lake Okeechobee. Then there's another aquifer that's a much lower quality aquifer called the Biscayne Aquifer that sits under kind of southeast Florida. Okeechobee, because it holds such a volume of water, I think it holds 1 trillion gallons at its current level, is kept at the lake level that it's at because it's become a little bit of a reservoir for southeast Florida. So it's become a water supply for that portion of the state. So again, we've mucked this up every way we can.
Literally,
right.
Literally every aspect of water, like water management, has been screwed.
Yeah, and it wasn't intentional at all. Like no one ever set out to do bad things.
No, yeah. So there's a lot of talk about like a reservoir, like a new reservoir, like an STA style reservoir. And are they talking about doing it north of the lake? Another one south of the lake?
Here's how I describe it.
What's
Nate?
The plan?
Is this the EAA reservoir?
There's the EAA reservoir.
What does that stand for?
Everglades Agricultural Area.
Thank you.
Back in 2008, 2009, somewhere in there, Charlie Crist brokered a deal and was hailed as the hero of all heroes because we were going to buy Big Sugar's land, put a big reservoir there, and it was going to hold the water and then clean it and then send it south. And you'd need to, when you talk about STAs versus reservoirs, STAs are treatment areas. So they're basically like a filter marsh. Then the reservoir is a holding cell. So right. you got some different components happening. So when you talk about the EAA reservoir, there is an STA that would be attached to it, but it's not anything as big as I think the others that we've got. So we're going to put this water into this holding cell and then clean it through this STA or somehow, and then we're going to send it south so that we can save Florida Bay. And I think that's a great thing. I think we need to do it. I would say there is some unbiased science out there that says it won't work as well as maybe it's been advertised to work, but I still think it's something we got to do.
Oh, I mean, I agree. I mean, it's a really small step, but it's a step in the right direction, I think.
It seems like that wouldn't be enough, like for that volume of water that you just said that Okeechobee holds, one little reservoir. How's
yeah,
that
for
gonna
sure
work?
Not. No.
Well, and I've asked, I'm trying to find these equations because I'm sure they're sitting somewhere on the South Florida Water Management District site, because that's the group that kind of controls everything that's happening there. There's got to be an equation that says if 95%, 92% of the water in Lake Okeechobee is coming from north of the water, the lake, it's coming at this volume. And then you're going to have to put it into this reservoir, which will add this capacity to the volume of the lake. But what happens when you have a rain event?
Right.
And you increase the volume coming into the lake, you're going to increase the volume going into the reservoir, and then you're not going to have the capacity anymore, and you're going to have to discharge. I know that's not a popular opinion, especially among the fishing community, but I think there is a serious... I've heard that this could reduce discharges by 60%. If it could do that, I'm on board with that. But I've also heard it could reduce discharges by 15%. That's a step in the right direction, but this is $1.5 billion for that 15%. And I don't know I don't know. I mean, again, I'm not a scientist, but it sounds like that's a little bit of a dicey. Here's what's going to happen. You asked about north of the lake, Nate, and this is Travis's math of what's going to happen. Eventually, we're going to create an artificial water conveyance system to get rid of all that water coming down the middle of the state. So if you say the Kissimmee River runs from north to south, if you say the Kissimmee watershed runs from Shingle Creek in the middle of Orlando and runs due south to Lake Okeechobee, we're basically going to go on either side of that as we go up, and we're going to create water farms, and we're going to build STAs, and we're going to build water conservation areas, and we're going to build reservoirs, and we're going to build wells, and we're basically going to take water out of the Kissimmee and put it back in the Kissimmee, or we're going to take it out of the Kissimmee, and if it's real dirty, we're going to treat it somewhat and put it underground, and we're going to do all these things artificially as a conveyance system to get water south in the manner we want it. And it boils down to, we've got too many people here, and no one's ever going to press pause on that.
Yeah, I don't see the population shrinking anytime soon.
It grows by 1,000 people a day.
Yeah, so that's ridiculous. So all these, like... So I like your idea of like the little reservoirs all the way down the Kissimmee River, because I think
that's not my idea. I think that's really going to happen.
Well, I'm a fan of that, because I think a bunch of little ones would probably do more than like one or two big ones right around the lake somewhere.
I think if you look at deep injection wells, you could drain Lake Okeechobee in not very long. Like, you don't need to, but with a deep injection well, you can actually make some material changes. A lot of environmentalists don't like that, but from a scientific standpoint, that's an acceptable solution. So you could clean that water to a level that's acceptable to put it either below the aquifer, into the aquifer, above the aquifer, where it would seep and recharge. It's not unheard of.
Okay, so I don't know a ton about quota hunts, but I know you guys talk about reservoirs. So if they were to kind of pivot this towards our duck hunting audience, reservoirs all up and down the Kissimmee River and around like Okeechobee, would that be better for duck hunting, like more opportunities for quota hunt?
Nate, answer that real quick, and then I'm going to shoot holes in your answer.
I mean, I know the answer. I mean, the answer is no.
The answer is no, and the reason the answer is no, on theory, it would.
Yeah, well, math-wise, it is going to give you more opportunities.
Well, it's
if you get drawn.
No, what it's going to do is give more habitat.
Okay.
Because some of those areas may not be on public land. So
some of these areas will probably be run by the water management districts, which do not allow access.
Well, water management districts will allow access. That's what the STAs are run by, South Florida Water Management District.
Well, I know a lot of the Swift Mud stuff isn't.
Right. So, but these would still be under South Florida. So there's a precedent set there. But here's my concern. And this is speculation by Travis, and I haven't heard this from a lot of people. You can have a private water farm. So you can basically, if the state needs to get rid of some water and needs a place to hold it, you can have that on your property. So I fear what's going to happen is we're going to have some of these water farms sprout up along the Kissimmee that we will not have access to. They're going to be private.
Because it's Farmer Brown's back 20 acres.
Back 1,000 acres. And guess what Farmer Brown's going to have sitting on those 1,000 acres?
All the ducks.
Because it's going to be full of duck food because it's nutrient-rich stuff. It's going to be these little shallow ponds. And
you won't have the state spraying the hydrilla, which is another thing.
Yeah, I would say there's going to be some kind of regulation on that, but I would think it would be a lesser degree than what you see in the lakes that we've got. If ducks come down and they spray, let's say, Toho, the ducks are going to get up off Toho and go find food. They're not going to leave, but they're going to go find food. If they can find food sitting across the road, it's the same phenomenon we see in retention ponds and stuff like that all the time, right? You drive by a retention pond at Publix and it's loaded with ducks because it's full of duck food.
Oh, yeah.
I have some trepidation about that. Hopefully I'm wrong and it will turn into way more waterfowling opportunities, but I'm concerned about that long term.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that. So we keep hearing a lot about how Big Sugar is like enemy number one of this whole thing. Is that true? And if so, what do we do about it?
Is it true? I think is a hard question. I'm in
agreement with you on that one.
I think the more I dig into science, the more I'm convinced there's a lot of, this is death by 1,000 cuts. And I think today the biggest culprit is septic infrastructure. I think septic infrastructure and runoff. However, let me listen to the next sentence I say, everyone listening to this, before you type your hate mail and say, oh, he's in Sugar's back pocket. That's what's happening today. 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, Sugar was the absolute big culprit. So if you look at this whole thing going back 40 years, 50 years, 60 years, Sugar's played a way bigger part in it. They may not be playing the same part in it today that they were. Did you know the legacy bottom of muck on the bottom of Lake Okeechobee is a 50-year legacy? So there's nutrients and stuff down there that is 50 years old.
Hmm. Wow.
Yeah. And again, if you ask 15 nonprofits and 15 people at the water district and 15 people off the street and 15 scientists, you'll get, well, the Sugar's back pumping into the lake. The only data I can find does not support that.
Yeah, that's the only data I've seen too.
But let me caveat that by saying I've heard a lot of people that I trust tell me, oh, they're spraying this lake or they're spraying that lake, and you can't find data to support that either. So I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but I believe that there, I could be persuaded that the data by Swift South Florida Water Management District may not be fully accurate, but I also don't think it's going to be completely the other way.
Right, right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
I think it shows 35 days of back pumping in the last 5 years. And that includes Irma. That includes a couple other major rain events. If somebody came along and said, well, it's twice that, okay, well, it's 70 days over the last 5 years.
Right. So I think from what I understand, one of Big Sugar's big roles in the whole Okeechobee situation is they're one of the main reasons we can't push the water south to really, really get the natural flow back, because they own a lot of the land south and they don't want their stuff flooded, right? So that's what I look at when I see, you know, people talk about Big Sugar. I don't know if they're contributing to the nutrient problem as much as they're contributing to the we can't move the water south problem.
That's a great point, Nate. I would say I don't know the answer to that. I would think the answer is somewhere in the middle. I think if you dig into the EAA agreement, the SB10, and let's buy the land and send it south, and we're gonna build this giant EAA reservoir, and it was gonna be this big, but now it's gonna be this big, but now it's gonna be this big, and it keeps shrinking. I think if you went back and looked at the deal initially, and that stuff's public record, so I'm not going to tell you what I think, but I think if you went back and looked at the deal initially, well, we'll tell you a little bit of what I think. I think it was a sweet deal for Sugar, pun intended. So we celebrated it. We cheered it. Charlie Crist was a hero. But I think if you look at it and really dig into the language and the verbiage and all that stuff, I think it was a better deal for Sugar than we're aware of. And that doesn't play well in the narrative, but I that's what I kind of believe today. Again, I'm not defending Sugar. I think they definitely should be on the hook for a lot of this. But I definitely think Orlando, Osceola County, there's a lot of culpability up and down that whole watershed.
I agree. Yep, I agree.
You've got this mess. You've got this jumbled chemical menagerie of things, and you're trying to disentangle it and place blame on certain things. And, P.S., at the end of the day, I don't really care who's to blame. I would like it fixed, please.
Right. Exactly.
Like can we sit down and figure out a way to fix this? This is an emergency situation. Like, let's get it repaired.
Well, now that it's impacting tourism, which is what I'm seeing on the articles that show up on my feed on Facebook or whatever, you'd think that somebody like Disney would want to jump in and say, hey, we have the money and the resources. We want to help.
I've asked that repeatedly. If Big Sugar's really the enemy, and if Big Sugar's really the enemy, which the Everglades Trust has, you know, kind of called them out as the enemy, why hasn't anybody pitted Big Sugar up against Big Disney and had them kind of in a little PR war where they're both impacting the state and both could contribute some money and some private money could get this done in 15 minutes.
Oh, yeah. I agree with that.
Disney could stroke a check and build reservoirs wherever they wanted and probably throw some pumps down there and we could fix this problem like in 6 months or a year. That's probably an exaggeration, but the idea, private money could get it fixed. Somebody needs to call Tesla.
Yeah, Elon Musk, come help us, buddy.
Yeah, because that dude could knock it out in a minute.
No, I like the idea of get Disney on board because, you know, they are, you would think that they are environmentally conscious, as big of a company as they are, as worldwide of a company as they are. They have to have some kind of environmental, like they have to be conscious of it. And you would think that if they knew that they were contributing to this, and they probably do, and if we can like find some like people who would just not blame Big Sugar 100% of the time and actually start looking at the real, where the water really comes from, we could like get Disney on board with it. And like you said, they could stroke a check, do some stuff, and they would be a huge, big-time PR campaign for them.
The broader problem, though, is it's not really Disney's fault problem because developers in Orlando aren't tied to Disney, per se. They just happen to build their... So if Disney builds a park and it impacts this much of the water, it's not their fault that somebody came next door and decided to build all these houses.
Yeah,
it's
not their fault
that somebody else came next door and built all these houses. That's why I'm saying... You can pick a target. You can pick a enemy in this. And for the 18th time, Sugar is not innocent at all. They've got a lot of blood on their hands in it. At the same time, I don't know that fight necessarily fixes everything. And,
yeah.
You know, in my heart of hearts, I don't like the idea of any of this because we're doing all these man-made solutions to correct a man-made problem that we can't disentangle. So no matter what, we're going to end up with artificial water conveyance down the center of the state, artificial water conveyance. St. Lucie and Coosa-Hatchee didn't used to flow like they do now. We've messed everything up already. And I have this fear, this trepidation that we're going to make it worse. And you get one shot at this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So I get kind of emotional talking about it because it's serious. And this is my home. And this has been my family's home for 100 years. Like, this is where we're from. And I this problem doesn't get fixed in my lifetime. It doesn't get fixed in your lifetime, Nate.
No, no way.
And you're a lot younger than I am.
But, you know, fixing the problem, what kind of organizations would you put your money behind and your weight behind right now that are actually working towards it? Talk about, I mean, we have on our list Everglades Trust. What is Bull Sugar? Who are the heroes here?
I don't know, man. I got some reservations. If you want to get into, is this organization got sugar money behind it, or does Adam Putnam have sugar money behind him, or does Rick Scott have sugar money behind him? I think you got to look at where the money came from to fund Everglades Trust, and I'll leave it at that. But there's some connections back there that leave me paused. Again, I'm willing to take everybody at face value and say everybody wants to fix this problem. So let's see if we can fix it. Let's build the reservoir. Let's see if we can get the water south. There's so many, the comprehensive Everglades restoration plan, the SERP, has like 64 points or 68 points to move the water south. Man, it's just so complex. I was talking to Emily the other day. You know, you've got tribal lands that might get impacted. That's something that nobody really has governance over besides the Seminole tribe or the Miccosukee tribe. If you look at the South Florida Water Management District that controls all this, on their board, they've got people from agriculture, which could have ties to sugar. They've got a bunch of lawyers. If you look at the RAC, the Water Recreation Advisory Committee or something like that, that advises, it's basically the citizens board that advises the South Water Management District. They've got people across the spectrum on it, which I think is good and fair. But then you hear stuff like, oh, sugar's got them in their pocket. And it does give you pause when you look at stuff like that. Like, I don't know anymore. I think the change happens. I've really tried to remain kind of agnostic in this so that I don't get sucked into the narrative of one side or the other. And I think change happens with people being informed, digging into this. And obviously it's impacting my revenue, but this is where we live, guys. And this is a problem.
So it sounds like the best way to get involved is to talk to our representatives, our senators, our county commissioners, right?
Yeah, like particularly where we're at right now, it's governors, senators, representatives. And there's involvement. I mean, Congressman Brian Mast, Joe Negron, who's going out, they're pretty on board with this. I've heard some stuff from DeSantis about wanting to fix the problem, but I haven't really heard a concrete plan on it. But I do like that he's acknowledged it and is working towards it. I'll be honest with you. I don't like the Rick Scott, Bill Nelson election at all. Like, those are our only two choices, and this is definitely been a problem under Rick Scott, even though it goes back legacy-wise way back. And Bill Nelson's been in politics for 45 years and hasn't seemed to fix any of it. So it's just that's a really tough choice for me. You know, I don't know, man. It's a thing where no matter who gets elected, we need to not let. Here's what's going to happen, and I'm fearful. The wind is going to shift and blow this red tide offshore. And we're going to go into a dry season and the discharges are going to slow. Everybody's going to shut up about it. That's what I fear is going to happen.
Yeah.
Right. Because
it's not
sexy.
It's not right in front of our face.
Right. The news isn't.
There aren't dead fish on the shore. Right.
So yep. If you're listening to this, take 30 seconds, take 2 minutes, go write your congressman, write Governor Scott, write whoever the next senator is, Nelson or Scott. Like, don't let this die. That's the biggest action item, is please keep this alive so that we're pushing on this. And we need our folks out of state to do it too. If you come here and recreate here.
Mm-hmm. Any of you, I was talking to Travis about this the other day, about the number of duck hunters in the state of Florida versus duck hunters in other states. But if all of you are trying to come to Florida, you know, we have listeners in every state now, and you want to kill your trophy duck here, you better be writing to our representatives to do it, because duck hunting is for sure being impacted. Fishing, if you want to come catch all these game fish inshore, tarpon, you better write, because we can't do it alone. We need everyone, all of the outdoorsmen nationally, to come together.
Yeah. I mean, if you've ever even visited Disney World, go write to our senators and governors and representatives.
Write to ours, but also write to yours in D.C. because they control so much of this problem. When you talk about the Everglades as a federal problem. The Cape Sable Seaside Sparrow, as small and throwaway as that sounds, like, let's just turn the faucet on.
Mm-hmm.
That's a federal intervention problem. There's not a person in Florida that can fix it. The Army Corps of Engineers manages lake levels and stuff. Their direction comes from Congress. So this is a thing where we really need national pressure applied in D.C. If you're listening and you're in Illinois, talk to your Illinois congressman, talk to your Illinois senator. Please send them a little note and say, hey, will you please take up arms for what's happening down in Florida? Like, that would help us out tremendously. And we are on the ropes.
Yeah.
And I'm worried we're going to make a slight recovery, but it's not chronic. It's fatal.
Yeah.
Well, to pull us up from a kind of a nosedive of sadness, it's always been the small groups of people working together one step at a time to implement change. So if we can all put our boots on and write a letter, that would be great.
Message me. We will try to have this in the show notes, but I will try to put our contact form for our local senators and congressmen, Republicans, Democrats, whoever. And then as the election happens, once the election is over, this is where my thing is, say Putnam wins, or say Gwen Graham wins, or whatever. We need to all, because we're all contacting right now who we want to win. What's going to happen when that person doesn't win? We all need to get on board and contact and rally behind whoever does win. We can't be divided on this. We've got to,
right.
So to speak, attack and let them know we will not tolerate this any longer. It needs to be fixed.
It's a good word.
Stay woke. Literally, this is an issue to stay woke on.
This is the most stay woke thing.
Stay woke issue.
And thank you guys for giving up one episode to us.
Yeah, if this is your first time listening, our episodes are not like this. They're usually fun and silly and slightly dumb, but entertaining. So go back and listen to anything in the archives if you want to laugh. But this is so serious. This is happening in our backyard. We wanted to have a little family meeting and talk through what's going on. And if you have questions about any of the data that Travis is been researching to get us to the point where we could speak intelligently here. He's had dinner with scientists, gone to meetings around the state. Reach out to him. He's Travis Thompson on Instagram, Twitter, castandblastfl.com. You can email him from that site. He is ready and willing to talk to anybody who will talk.
Yeah. All day, every day.
Thanks for listening to this special episode of the Cast and Blast Florida podcast. For links to Nate's new sunglasses, check out our show notes at castandblastfl.com. We'll also include information about how to reach out to your representatives about the water management situation in the state. If you like our show, do us a favor and tell one of your buddies that might like it too. Or if you're feeling extra generous, take a minute to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. This helps people find the show. We'll be back to our regularly scheduled programming next week for episode 50, which just so happens to be our 1-year anniversary. Catch you there. Later.